Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You can search me. I don't have any of it. But I did smirk this morning when I saw that. I was like, oh, man. I saw somebody on my Twitter who was like, oh, my God. There's money all over the place on I-285. Top of the hour, we will ask about an issue that is possibly involving your favorite college football team here in the SEC, and an answer to the question, if I could grant you one wish to change anything in sports, be it a rule, be it an outcome, be it a player that you signed that you didn't want, one thing you can change in sports, what would it be? Sports Radio 929 The Game. Happy Thursday. Welcome in. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com inside the Kia Studios as the day turns to the 11th of July. Hello, everybody. I'm Will Pelagic. Siobhan Frazier pushing the dials on the ones and twos and taking your phone calls at 404-741-0929. That is the phone number. It's also the number for the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. And I'm asking the question, if I grant you one wish to change anything in sports, what would it be? I want all instant replay gone. I want it all gone. Bye-bye. Bye-bye to all the instant replay. Bye-bye in NFL. Bye-bye Major League Baseball. Bye-bye in the NBA. Bye-bye in hockey. Bye-bye to the VAR. Would it maybe compromise the U.S. Women's National Team victory? But we have jumped the shark when it comes to instant replay. It's gone too far. We know too much. We've went too far. And now there's no stopping it. And I personally think it all needs to be gone. But we'll entertain your thoughts on the hotline 404-741-0929 coming up. In about 15 minutes' time, my good friend Ross Dellinger will talk a little college football with us from Sports Illustrated. And we'll also talk about this next topic that I find very interesting. It was about a month ago, or really about a month and a half ago, I should say, when the SEC presidents, chancellors, athletic directors, and those in administrative roles met in Destin to talk about a variety of things, but the main legislation that came out of those meetings centered around the allowance of the Southeastern Conference to sell beer and wine at its stadiums, beginning with the upcoming football season, in regular sections. Originally, the conference had a league-wide ban on alcohol sales. Since then, there have been provisions made for premium areas to sell alcohol, and by premium, read people who donate lots of money to get alcohol inside the stadium. Georgia, interestingly enough, put a provision out there that said anybody who is a donor of $25,000 or more over a five-year period, basically what amounts to a car. If you donate that amount of money in a five-year period, you have basically special dispensation to go to an area to consume a beer. You can't bring it back to your seat. But then this allowance comes from the conference, and many are wondering, okay, which are the schools that are going to step up and actually allow this to be something that is allowed at football games, at basketball games, baseball, and the like? And the answer is really only one has stepped forward. The one school was Texas A&M, and it was no shock or surprise to anybody who knows anything about the inner workings of the school there and where the money comes from. Lots of high-level oil donors who enjoy a beer a time or two. You could say that Texas A&M, of any of the schools, you can add Missouri in that too, of the schools that basically, if you play the little Sesame Street game, one of these things is not like the other, one of these things just doesn't belong, Texas, as we know, is not the South. And I think the big obstacle for a lot of these fan bases that might want to have beer and wine sold to them in the non-premium areas is that you're going to have to bark your way through a bit of a morality block that exists right now, not only amongst high-level donors at places like Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, Mississippi, Mississippi State, and other schools that don't look like they're going to adopt a new policy on alcohol sales. Do you want to see it at your favorite school? 404-741-0929. Georgia has already come out and said they're not going to. It will not sell beer in the general seating area, despite the fact that the SEC recently repealed its restrictions. They will still have that $25,000 donation spot that will allow those, again, who want to purchase a beer to consume it in a particular area. Which, again, is why I counter the argument about the quote-unquote morality block. Because it's not that you can't. It's that they're only allowing the glitterati, the donor-level people to do it. Not for the riffraff who all they do is spend a ticket or buy it off StubHub. You, the common fan, we don't want you drinking beer and wine. It's not right for you to drink beer or wine in a college football setting because we want to maintain a family atmosphere. Oh, come on. That's the one part of this argument that I don't like from the school's perspective, the ones who are saying they're not going to, because they won't stop the people in the suites and the premium levels from consuming alcohol. They'll do that all over the place. And as somebody who has been in the premium areas of a couple of different college football venues in the Southeastern Conference, I will tell you, if you think just because somebody donates a lot of money doesn't mean they can't be overserved, then I have a bridge to sell you in New Mexico. But there is the question to be raised, and this was raised by University of South Carolina Director of Athletics Ray Tanner when he yesterday announced that they are going to hold off on their own alcohol sales, at least at the football stadium logistically. They're still waiting back on the potential logistics of doing it at their basketball and baseball stadiums, and as you know here, baseball is probably bigger there than it is at other places, so that would be a boon for them. The problem there is they don't believe that their football concessions are logistically sound enough to be able to even get regular concessions right, let alone adding in the additional burden of alcohol sales, beer and wine being those, of course. And the other part of this, too, if you want to make money on this, you have to hire extra security. You have to train your concessionaires, and again, the different rules and the laws state by state are different on how they govern this, but you have to get a special training for your concessionaires, and you have to have special people trained to be able to pour alcohol and read the IDs and all that kind of thing. And again, it's not about the actual pouring. It's about, you know, it's about keeping track of what is sold. I mean, who among us has not been at a concession stand at an event where they haven't seen, you know, one of those cops come up with the clipboard and the money tree, and they come up and they basically take the inventory of the alcohol. They need to be trained in that practice as well. So it's not like it's just so much as simple as saying, okay, pull the plug, let's go, and we're going to do this. But the other part of this is that there are other schools out there that are doing this and cashing in on a financial boon. The University of Texas said it made anywhere between $1 to $2 million in alcohol sales over the last year. Ohio State's doing it. Boston College is doing it. NC State just announced today ironically, on the same day that their basketball program announced that they have received a notice of allegations, a pair of level one, schedule one allegations for their basketball program. Ironic, they put this out there on the same day to try and bury the lead on that. But you will now be able to, at Carter Finley Stadium in Raleigh, be able to buy beer and wine to watch Dave Doran mess up a football program. I mean, coach a football program. Too soon? But anyway, that's just my soapbox on that issue. I don't feel quite as passionately about it as maybe my tone of voice raised to the level there. But I will say this. The one thing I do not stand for is monetary morality. That's the one thing I don't understand. And that's the one thing that I think is the unjustifiable portion of this. You mean to tell me that people who pay a lot of money can't abuse alcohol? If it was such a bad thing, then you would ban it in the entire stadium. That is the point. So if it's so bad that the people who pay the regular seating price, who quite honestly, I would argue, are the more true fans, these are the people you need to rope in, okay? You're not, because I don't know really anybody, unless somebody wants to call up 404-741-0929, if you're upping your donation to Georgia just so you can buy a beer, if that's the only reason, I don't know if that's enough of a hook for me. Because quite honestly, if you're donating about $5,000 a year just so you can drink at Sanford Stadium and Stegman Coliseum and Foley Field, you're going to have to drink a lot of beers to be able to compensate for that. And quite honestly, I don't know if I want to see you after that. So in my mind, I don't see where that is a pull. We'll talk about this issue with a man who has covered this issue about as closely as anybody, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. We'll also get into some on-the-field stuff with the Bulldogs and Tide and preview SEC Media Days, which begin next week on Monday in Hoover, Alabama, which, of course, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game will have full coverage there on site with our midday show and getting you the latest and greatest as we get ready for football, which is around 50 days away on the college football scene. We come back on the overnight. Will Pelagic here with you, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. Let's head out to the waitfor.com hotline and join one of my favorites, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated college football writer. SEC Media Days are next week, Ross. And, you know, it's funny, probably nobody in the country was more on this story than you were the last time the SEC presidents and athletic directors and coaches all gathered together in Destin. The administering, or at least allowing by the SEC for beer and wine sales, really only one school has really stepped forward, and a lot of schools have basically said, not yet, it's too complicated for us. Where do we sit from, I guess, where you are looking at this, from the fact that it doesn't seem like a lot of schools have stepped up to the plate and taken advantage?
Yeah, you know, you're going to have, I think, you, just because of the, it's just like everything, legislative in the world, you know, it's slow to happen. The process is slow, just like, you know, passing a law in Congress. You know, it might get this many votes this year, next year it might get a little more, and the next year a little more. Every, you know, you ease into things. And I think this is what happened with the SEC in the stadium-wide alcohol ban, is that it took several years for them to get to the point to allow it. And now it's going to probably take, for some schools, several more years to decide to do it. And you'll see schools, I think, ease into it, like a few already have, with premium, you know, making it available in premium areas or created premium areas that really aren't premium. It's just kind of a test to test out the, you know, a beer garden or something like that. You've seen that happen at A&M and LSU and Ole Miss, I believe, Auburn. So I think it's just going to be a slow process. You know, SEC is in the Bible Belt, and you know how that goes with stuff, with religion and culture and things like that. So everybody's just going to probably ease into it, but there's going to be a few schools that are probably going to just up and do it. You know, LSU, I expect to do that eventually. They haven't made an announcement yet or anything, but I expect them to do it eventually. I think A&M is the only one so far maybe that I've seen that says they will have it, you know, available stadium-wide. So it'll take a few years, but I would guess within 3 years you'll see maybe half the league or so doing it, and then probably 3 to 5 more years you'll see pretty much everybody doing it. That's just kind of how things work like this.
You know, it's interesting because you said the A&M, and like you said, that's probably the only one that I've noticed that's actually come forward and said, yes, they're absolutely going to do it. I know Georgia said no, Bama, Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss have said no, and other places have other plans in place. What does A&M know, or what are they doing that other places, other schools aren't doing, or is it just, again, a down-to-the-culture thing?
Yeah, I think it's mainly culture. And you look at the past of these schools, you know, and your listeners might not know, but the SEC was the only, just to give some background, the SEC was the only conference in FBS conference that had a law banning stadium-wide alcohol sales. You could only do it in premium areas. Well, you had a lot of schools start to, you know, kind of work around the rule and be creative. LSU was one of them, and Texas A&M was another, and Auburn did some things, and Ole Miss did some things. And they were creative. They kind of created these premium areas, and A&M was, again, one of the ones doing that. So you figure when they opened it up, you know, stadium-wide, they were going to jump on it, and they did. And it's smart in a lot of ways. You know, if you handle it properly, it's a great way to make money. And, you know, Texas and Texas A&M and those schools over there, you know, Texas has been doing it for a few years, stadium-wide sales. They've made, you know, anywhere from $2 to $3 million, I believe, in revenue from beer sales over the last few years. So A&M's right next door, and I'm sure saw that. So when you're a situation like that, where your top rivals doing all that stuff, you know, you jump on as well.
Yeah, it's weird because Georgia announced right before this came out a plan basically where if you donate $25,000 over 5 years, you can have beer in a special area, but you can't bring it back to your seat. So, like you said, they've created a workaround. And again, to me, this doesn't seem more like a culture thing. This kind of speaks more to what South Carolina Director of Athletic Director Ray Tanner said earlier yesterday, where he basically said, it's not necessarily about the culture. It's more about we don't know whether we can actually monetize this to the level that people think we can.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, you know, when you look at it on a large scale of these athletic budgets that are, you know, well over the 100 million mark, and you take, I think, the top revenue, you know, top money-making school when it comes to beer sales was Texas. I think the top number I saw was $3.3 million. I mean, Texas has a budget well over $150 million. So $3.3 million is not really much, you know, and you start looking at other schools, and it's if Texas made the most at $3.3 million, you're probably talking about, and that's not profit, that's just revenue. So profit, it was more like probably $1.5 to $2 million. And you start looking at these other places, you know, they're not going to make that much. They're not going to make what Texas made. And when they compare it to their budget, you know, it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of a drop in the bucket for them. It's not really that much. However, as a couple of ADs and administrators told me, any money is money. And I think a lot of people view it like that. So South Carolina might only make, you know, $500,000 or so on it. Well, guess what? That's $500,000 that you did not have before.
You're definitely right. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, joining us here on the WadeForward.com hotline here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game with me, Will Pelagic. Let's go on the field, Ross. Georgia obviously coming into the season off of an 11-3 year a year ago, and obviously getting back to the SEC championship game again, losing to Bama. I look at this conference and I see the fact that obviously Bama and Clemson are obviously the tops nationally in college football, and Georgia, for a lot of people, seeks kind of representative third. I almost feel like Georgia gets a bit of the shaft because they have to basically play a de facto college football quarterfinal every time they play Alabama. It just, I feel like their perception would be different if they didn't have that game at the end.
Probably, and they could have helped themselves the last couple of years by kind of getting over that hurdle, that Alabama hurdle. You know, they had plenty of chances to do it. They blew both leads in the SEC championship game last year and the national championship game the year before. So they've had a chance to get over that. Until they get over that, you know, they're not going to start the preseason number one or number two. They're gonna start it behind them. And they've got to get over that hump, you know, the Bama hump. Got to get over it. But you're right. You know, they have a harder road, obviously. Everybody in the SEC, in specifically in the SEC West, you know, has a harder road than probably anybody because they have to play Alabama, either in the regular season or in the championship game or both. You know, I mean, I spent a lot of my career covering LSU, and you know, they haven't been Alabama in, I think, 8 years. And that, you know, there were a couple years in there where if they wouldn't have Alabama on the schedule, they probably would have played for at least an SEC championship, if not a national title. You could say that probably about the 2012 season. You might even say that about one or two more in there. So, you know, that's just how it works. You know, that's how it rolls. You know, you're in the SEC, you make all this money. At the same time, you got one heck of a tough schedule. And with Nick Saban still at Alabama, it'll probably forever, until he leaves, he'll probably forever be that roadblock for some teams.
You know, Kirby Smart has recruited well over the last couple of years, so it's not to say that Georgia's not going to have a window, but with Fromm going into his junior year and many projecting it being his last, would you say that this is at least the best chance in the current, I guess, window for them to try and at least maybe be the giant killer over Bama this year?
Well, I mean, when you look at it just from Georgia's team perspective, it does look that way. And then you start looking at Alabama's team, and it doesn't look that way. You know, I mean, Alabama offensively, you know, returns a lot of guys. You know, of course, the quarterback and Tua and his top, I think, two or three receivers return. I mean, it's electric. And they did lose some people in defense, but they seem to reload every year with people. So, but in a way, yeah, this is, you know, Georgia, yeah, you said they return a lot of guys. They got a great offensive line. I was reading about their offensive line earlier today. Great offensive line all coming back. I think four starters. So, and of course, they're always salty defensively. And, you know, they're going to probably need a little more from Fromm. You know, downfield. They're going to need a little in big games. You know, I covered the LSU-Georgia game and the Georgia-Alabama game. Now, he played great against Alabama for most of the time. He played terrible against Georgia or against LSU. So they you know, they need him to be consistent in a deep threat, you know, in big games and not necessarily just be that game manager type guy.
What's the number one thing, as we're talking with Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, last one for you, big guy. What's the number one thing you're looking towards when it comes to a question you want answered or an issue that you think will be most prevalent when the league convenes for its media days next week in Hoover?
Well, you know, first of all, the SEC is bringing 9 quarterbacks of the 14 teams. Each team gets to bring 3 players in, so 9 of the teams are bringing a quarterback. So that should be kind of exciting, and Tua, of course, is one of those. And, you know, he lost the Heisman to Kyler Murray last year. He lost the championship game in a blowout to Clemson. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say. I plan on kind of following him around a little bit, and it'll be really interesting to see how he, you know, handles those runner-up type questions. You know, he doesn't talk a ton. They don't have a lot of media availability over there. Of course, he missed the Manning Passing Academy camp over the summer with what they said was some kind of minor hamstring injury. He's had ankle, he has knee injury. So he's been banged up. So, I mean, I think a lot of eyes are certainly going to be on him.
You can find his stuff, as always, not only in the print version, but online at SI.com. Fantastic football writer, Ross Dellinger. Appreciate the time, as always, bud. Good catching up with you.
All right, well, thanks.
Ross joins us, of course, on the WadeFord.com hotline here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Coming up, we heard from the least powerful man in sports. Well, the least powerful man in a... have been harping on over the last couple of days and what might happen with result of that issue. And also something I feel like that we are completely missing the boat on. A couple of issues at hand that we'll get to next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. We'll go back to the NBA here a little bit. I do have a couple of things in this particular time period I want to talk about. Neither, which is, I think, big enough for a full segment, but I did at least want to bring this up because I was inspired by Ken's Sports Flash earlier this hour when he played the comments of Adam Silver, the least powerful man in a power position in sports. Look, and I know that he gets a lot of credit and kudos basically because the players run his game. And whether you like that part of the NBA or not, that remains to be seen. I know that there's been a lot of talk about exactly where the power should rest, but he is saying a lot of the same things that I'm saying when it comes to just how much I think there needs to be some changes to the way the NBA is run. Because in my mind, and you could chime in too, 404-741-0929, for the betterment of the sport, off seasons like the one we just saw, where you have players basically breaking protocol and doing what GMs aren't supposed to do and saying they're going to team up and things of that nature, in my mind, that's not good for the game. Now, people will say, oh, well, at least he didn't go to the Lakers, he being Kawhi Leonard, because that would have totally messed with the balance of power in the National Basketball Association. Yes, I agree. But in my mind still, I just don't think that there's enough of an incentive for players to sign places like Atlanta that will allow this franchise to take the step from being burgeoning contender to legitimate threat to win a championship. Here's Adam Silver talking about the power and leverage that exists between the players and owners right now.
It needs to be addressed, and there's not a simple solution there. This is a talent-driven business. Players have leverage. They have economic power of their own.
And that's the problem, is that there is no real solution. Like, are you going to tell players they can't demand trades? No, that'd be ridiculous. Are you going to tell owners you have to rescind to a demand or you have to create buyout situations? No. And granted, the NBA, very much like baseball, very much like football, does have an extended time of player control on a rookie contract. It's about 6 or 7 years. So I'm not acting like it's not like a team is not committing to a player long-term, unless, of course, they trade him away. See Amari Spellman of the Atlanta Hawks and how that didn't work out. But in my mind, I still think there needs to be some way, shape, or form where, whether it's being in a certain half of the league, that you can offer more of a max. Again, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but Adam Silver does know that there is an issue, and he talked about why he thinks that issue needs to be fixed when it comes to the NBA.
It concerns all of us. I mean, it falls in the same category of issues of the so-called rule of law within a sports league. I mean, you have a contract, and it needs to be meaningful on both sides. On one hand, there's an expectation if you have a contract and it's guaranteed, that the team is going to meet the terms of the contract, and the expectation on the other side is the player is going to meet the terms.
And that is, again, I think he's more angry about the George part of it than he is about the Kawhi part of it. But, again, in my mind, I just want to see, I don't want to sit here and say I want the NFL model, like where every team can win it every year, but I want to see a team that goes for a rebuild be rewarded. That's my biggest issue and concern, and that's what I want to see for the Atlanta Hawks, who are back in action tomorrow taking on Washington in the NBA Summer League. Again, we talked about the Summer League observations earlier in the show with our DeShaun Tate, who was in Las Vegas watching the Atlanta Hawks. You can hear his thoughts on the podcast right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 99thegame.com. I'll post it on my Twitter, at Willie P. Style. And, of course, you can find it at the 92.9radio.com app. One other thing I want to bring up here, and this is a complete left turn, but we need to change the way we talk about players accused of domestic violence in sports. I wondered aloud, especially after we saw the situation happen with Puka Williams at Kansas, especially after we saw the Tyreek Hill audio released earlier this week from the Kansas City Chiefs, the Odubel Herrera season-long suspension, which brought out a real thoughtless column from a Philadelphia writer who said that the suspension was too long compared to other domestic violence situations. Whoa. Time out. Whether these accounts are to be believed or not, number one, not for me to judge. But number two, the scenario in my mind needs to be brought up with the fact that even if you put yourself in the position to be accused of domestic violence, that's not a good thing. It has become an epidemic in our country. And I know people are going to say, oh, well, there's people out to get athletes and not all these things are true. And what if there's no charges? No. That all that talk, all of that chatter is not useful to me. Because there are plenty of people who play sports who are not accused of domestic violence, not even close to being accused of domestic violence. And Steve Spurrier used to have a rule when he was at Florida and he was at South Carolina, and I don't agree with him on a lot of these things, but I agree with him on this. He basically had a blanket rule. If you were accused of any kind of violence, it involved a woman, you were off the team. No questions asked. Simple as that. I don't understand why other franchises and other places haven't brought about that. And I know that Tyreek Hill said in audio that apparently the assault that he was alleged in 2014 that he pled guilty for didn't happen, and this was caught on the audio tape that took place that was caught by his then-fiancé and then obviously later his wife, the mother of their child. And there was later accusation about, you know, him allegedly hitting the young boy and him having bruises, and she asked him where the bruises are. Like, none of that conversation means anything to me, because it honestly just sounds like a very toxic relationship. Not for me to judge, but in my mind, that gentleman, Tyreek Hill, has greater concerns in my mind than playing football. At least on his life, because he's father to a kid. And he has a relationship that I think needs to be fixed, because in my mind, football is a privilege. Football is something that is earned and responsibility that is levied for those who are worthy of that. And I don't think, if I look at any of these guys, Puka Williams, who had a 7-month team suspension, was basically kicked off the team, and now he's only going to serve a game because they dropped the charges, even though the police report talks about some gruesome things that I don't want to talk about on the air. And he's only going to serve a game. I don't like that. Odubel Herrera serving a 62-game suspension, and people are comparing it. Oh, well, Jose Reyes did this and only served this much, and Jerry Smilia served this much for doing this. It's all bad, guys. It's all bad. Why are we comparing one to the other? It's all equally bad. Just to have your name attached to that and be in a situation where it could be plausible that you are in that situation. Putting your hands on a woman or a child is never okay, period. And you shouldn't be in sports if you do that. You should be in jail. We'll come back. I have a lighthearted story that will transition out of this and get us in a better mood. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. So there are times, again, we were talking a lot about violence in the last segment. There are times when certain violence is justified. When a certain person needs to really just shut their mouth, and they're just not shutting their mouth. There's a story that came out this morning. A gentleman in a bagel shop on Long Island was, he's a vertically challenged guy. And he is going off on women and all kinds of things societally incorrect in life. And he says, why is it okay for women to say, oh, you're 5 feet on dating sites, you should be dead. That's okay? And he says, everywhere I go, I get the same smirk with a biting lip of people making fun of my height. This is crazy. I mean, the guy is just have a random rant about how like he just was asking for trouble. Now, I've never known anything about this. Again, you can't see this on radio, but I'm not vertically challenged. I'm 6'3". I've never had somebody get on me for my height. But it must really stink to be a short person. Well, because of this, he was basically going totally nuts. He tried to confront a couple of gentlemen and women inside the bagel shop, and so much so, after a while, after he was just bellyaching, one of the guys just basically tackled him and threw him to the ground, basically told him to shut up. The problem is the gentleman left without paying and kept bellyaching the entire time on the way out the door about how it stinks to be a short person. Short people need loving too, I should say. But like I said before, sometimes you just need to tell a guy that he needs to shut his darn mouth. Final hour of the program upcoming. We'll recap the Atlanta United. If you missed our conversation earlier with Jason Longshore about Atlanta's 2-0 win over St. Louis, we'll replay you a portion of that conversation coming up. Sell me on your desire for a Braves bullpen arm. And the big question on the hotline, 404-741-0929, if you could change one thing in sports, whether it's a rule, whether it's an outcome, whether it's a...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.